The Asian Classics Institute presents The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in March of 1998.
This is the beginning of Class 6.
Debating Jotang. Jotang meaning the format. You have to keep working on the format of it, okay? So we'll do those three things. The part from the Dura today is called Gaktu. Let me see. Say Gaktu. Gaktu. Gaktup is a special study called negatives and positives. Negative and positive. And mostly it's the study of Gak, okay, of negatives. Gak and Drum. It's really important for the study of emptiness. I gave a talk up in Barre, Massachusetts this weekend. 3 days, right? And it's an unusual place because they attract a lot of people from different Buddhist traditions. You know, there were people from all sorts of different Buddhist traditions. And so it's an interesting place to teach because they know something about Buddhism. They've all studied some Buddhism, most of them. And then it's interesting to teach because every school that they come from, be it Japanese Zen or Sri Lankan or Burmese or Thai, Theravadan traditions or even some other Tibetan traditions, they all have their own version of what emptiness is. And it was very interesting, you know, some of the ideas that were presented as myths, okay? The ideas are bad, okay? One idea was that she said she had spent 10 years, I think, staring at the floor. You know, that she had been taught to stare at the floor. And she was wondering what was supposed to happen, you know, and I'm like, I don't know, you know. And she felt like, she looked to be about 15. Sorry for her, you know, she looked like she said 15 years even, I don't know. But she had spent a long time staring at the floor, and this had been taught to her as the meaning of emptiness, or that she could understand emptiness in a way Another person was had spent, you know, years watching their breath, just watching their breath for years. And then every time a thought came up, they were supposed to just follow it and watch the thought, and that was going to make them see emptiness. And then another person said they went to this place and they taught them that emptiness meant that they should clear their mind out of everything. And if any thought came up, then they should just try to find a meditation place where there's no thoughts at all, you know, which is impossible according to all Buddhist theory, you know, all Buddhist theory, you know, to have no mental content at all is impossible. Even someone perceiving emptiness directly is focusing on something, you know. And like that, it was very interesting. The other guy, he was in a tradition that taught them that the luminous nature of the mind was emptiness, you know, that the fact that you are aware is what emptiness is. And if you could just focus on that, that you would see emptiness. So all these people didn't get to Gakdrup, okay? They didn't have the Gakdrup teachings, all right? And that's what I thought. It's really nice that you have Gakdrup today. And it was very sort of depressing, you know, that they kind of, you could see this emotion in their face of their world crumbling, you know? I mean, the more they heard, the more it became obvious to them that they had wasted 5 years or 10 years on something that doesn't have anything to do with emptiness. And it was kind of bittersweet, you know. They were kind of happy that they got a good explanation, and then they were kind of sad that when they saw that that was obviously not what emptiness was. I think most of them got what emptiness really is, because it makes sense, you know. Once you hear a good teaching on it, it's not like anything very esoteric. It's pretty clear what it is. So it's important to study Gakdrup. If you study Gakdrup well, you won't get into these strange ideas about staring at the floor for 10 years, okay? So we'll go to the definition of a Gakpa. Long. Okay. You don't mind. This is the longest thing tonight, I promise. I decided to lay off you guys a little bit, so it's only a 40-page reading, and I figured it's too much for you and it's too much for me. I was going crazy, too. So. And Winston drove too fast, so you didn't get as much reading as you could have. Okay. So take some time and write that. In Tibetan, they say, Gogomare. Say Gogomare. Gogomare. Gogomare means you don't have to carve it, just write it, okay? Alright. Say Rang, Musu, Tope, Le, Rangi, Gakcha, Musu, Chene, To, Gobe, Che. Okay. We'll go through the parts. First of all, the thing should be a Che, which means it exists. It's an existing thing. Okay? A negative is, first of all, a thing which exists. An example would be emptiness. Okay? Emptiness is a negative thing. All right? We're talking about the definition of a negative thing. This is Gakpa Teni. Okay? Gakpa is a negative thing. So first of all, it should be an object. It should be a thing. Okay. And there's this huge debate about Mepa itself, about non-existence itself. Does non-existence exist? You see? And it's a bitter debate in the monastery. I've seen the abbot of Tashi Lhunpo, which is one of the great monasteries, punch it out with one of my classmates in front of 1,000 monks. And they had a hard time deciding, you know, does non-existence exist? But that's another story. You can decide that in Winston's debate class. Okay, Rang means it, meaning the negative thing, okay? Mūsu tōpa means to perceive it directly, which perceives it directly. The state of mind, which is lo, okay? The state of mind which perceives it directly. Should, che. Che means to eliminate, okay? To eliminate something. This is the same root as Dorje Chöpa. What's Dorje Chöpa? Diamond cutter, okay? Chöpa means to cut or to eliminate something, okay? By cutting something out, all right? Chöpa. Musa Chöpa means it directly cuts something out, okay? What does it cut out? It's gakcha, okay? Gakcha means anything that you deny the existence of, okay? Anything which you say, this is not what we're talking about, okay? That's a gakcha, okay? In Madhyamika theory, gakcha means the thing that emptiness is empty of, okay? The thing that emptiness denies. The thing that the idea emptiness says doesn't exist, never did exist, never could exist. Which is what? A self-existent thing. Okay? Rangi gakcha means when you say, for example, emptiness, rangi gakcha is its own thing which it denies. Okay? Rangi means its own. Okay? So far what we have is, in order for the mind to perceive this thing, the mind must first eliminate something else. You see what I mean? The mind must first exclude something else directly. In order to perceive emptiness, you must first exclude self-existent things. Okay? So rangi gakcha means the thing which it excludes, the thing which it denies. First it must exclude that. And that's the only way it can talk. Talk means to perceive the meaning of the thing. Okay? So the whole long sentence means, and you can put this on your homework, something like this, okay? Definition of a negative thing. I have it here, let's see. Is a thing which must be perceived. By the state of mind which perceives it, directly, through a process of eliminating, directly, that which it denies. So I'll give you some examples, okay? And you tell me what's the process. What's the process? Like if I say emptiness, when I say emptiness, your mind can only perceive that thing by eliminating something. You see what I mean? It's the absence of something. Okay, when I say emptiness, and by the way, this is your homework assignment, your meditation assignment, okay? We're trying to, the whole purpose of this class is to get you out of the mood of thinking of emptiness as something positive, okay? It's not the floor. It's not the thoughts running around in your mind. And it's not the fact that your mind is aware. Emptiness is the absence of something. And it's a gakpa. It's a negative thing, okay? How do you perceive a negative thing? What's the definition of a negative thing? The mind which understands that thing directly, the mind which perceives that thing directly, has to first exclude something else, and then it can see the thing. You see what I mean? It has to exclude what that thing denies. So emptiness denies a self-existent object. And for you to see emptiness, either intellectually or directly, first you have to eliminate or exclude a self-existent thing. Okay? That's one example. And that's why emptiness is a negative. Okay? Because it can only be perceived by the mind which perceives it directly through the process of excluding directly that which it denies. Okay? And that's the definition of a negative thing. There are some more classic negative things. How about what we call numka? Okay, say numka. I'll give you I'll write it for you. By the way, before we do that, how are we going to write emptiness in this school? What's the Tibetan word for emptiness? Tombanyi. This school doesn't accept the idea of Tombanyi. You see, we're in a lower school. We're fishing around in the lower schools. Okay? They don't call emptiness emptiness. They call it, one of the things they call it is you won't see the word emptiness used in the lower schools. You'll see selflessness, anatman, okay? Or you'll see chunyi. See a chunyi? Chunyi. Chunyi is like dharmata, meaning the real nature of things, okay? It includes the word for dharma. It means the dharmaness of things, okay? I translate it as the real nature of things. Chunyi is a gakpa. Chinyi is a negative. Why? If you want to perceive the real nature of things, first you have to exclude mentally all those things which are not it. Okay? And by now, somebody in the class, like maybe Mark, should say, wait a minute. In this school, they said everything was like that. Right? Didn't they say in this school that to perceive anything you had to exclude all that it was not? You see what I mean? Like you perceive the pen in this school by the process of excluding everything which is not the pen. You see what I mean? You take everything which is not the pen and then you reverse it and you get the pen. It's called a dokpa, right? And you've had that. That's like a principle of this school. It's very important in this school. The dunchi is the way you get to form a mental image of something is by excluding everything which the thing is not. The text is careful to say that's what we're not talking about that when we describe how you perceive a negative. Okay, that's a different thing. You see, that's how you form the mental image. And that's done through a process of eliminating or reversing everything which is not the thing. The opposite of everything which is not the thing is the thing. Okay? And that's true of perceiving all things in this school. But that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about a negative. And that's why they add the extra words in there. Okay? They're not saying everything in the universe is a negative. You see, if this was the meaning of negative, then you could never find a positive thing. Okay? So in this school, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a process where you directly eliminate, consciously, pretty much consciously, you eliminate mentally everything else. Let's give another example of a negative thing in this school, okay, or in all Buddhist schools. Say Nemka? Nemka? People translate it as space, okay? And we've talked about it. You have to get good at this word, okay? Nemka is a special idea. Nemka can mean space, like the element of space. Nemka can mean the sky. In Tibetan, you say Nemka is the sky. Like Khandro is a sky goer, a Dakini, okay? A Buddhist angel, all right? And Nemka means sky. But in Buddhist philosophy, Nemka means the space which this pen occupies. Okay? The space which this pen occupies. I like to translate it as empty space. Okay? Empty space. Is empty space a dakpa or a mitakpa? Does it change or does it not change? It's careful. Does it function or not? Careful. I'll give you a couple arguments. Like, if you're, let's debate it, okay? All right. Who's gonna be a victim? Seamus, okay. Namka chuchen, okay? Take empty space, alright? Mitakwa yinde, it's a changing thing. Because Rengawa, you imagine, okay? Rengawa means sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not, okay? Rengawa means sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not, okay? So I'll say it again in English. I'll say it in Tibetan. Namga chöcha mitapa yende Rengawa yimbecha. Okay, so take empty space. It's a changing thing because sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. What do you say? Huh? Say tagmadru? Meaning, I disagree that sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. You have two choices, remember? What do you have? What are the two choices to cheer? First one? Tamadru, which means empty space is not a thing that comes and goes. Namka rengawa mayin. Okay? And then you could say what? The other choice is, he's a real good kepa machunger, okay? The other choice is kepa machung. Kepa machung means, okay, I admit that it comes and goes. But that doesn't mean it's a changing thing. Okay, I admit that it comes and goes, but that doesn't necessarily make it a changing thing. So which way are you going to go, Seamus? Oh, by the way, you can always agree. You can always say yin. You know? So you got three choices really, right? I agree that space is a changing thing. Or, I disagree that space comes and goes. Or, just because space comes and goes doesn't mean it's a changing thing. Okay? What's your choice? Come on. He says he agrees. Okay? That's the easy way out because you don't have to do anything, right? So I'll say namga chechen namga yimba ka. When I go down, it means what? Are you telling me it comes and goes? Okay, namga chechen. Say namga chechen. Oh, you guys are sleepy. Namga chechen. Rengawa yimba ka. You telling me it comes and goes? You say, duh, okay? Say, duh. Yes, that's what I said. Yeah, that's what I said. Okay, that's what I said. Okay? So, take the space in which this pen occupies. Rengawa yimba ta. Are you telling me it comes and goes? He said, duh. Duh. Say, duh. Duh. Okay? And it's pretty good, you know? I mean, when I take the pen back, the space goes away, right? Well, when I occupy it, it goes away, right? Which one do you want, Seamus? Okay, when the pen is there, it's occupied. And when it's not there, it's not occupied. So it changes, right? It comes and goes, right? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's always there, okay? When it's occupied, it has to be there or the pen couldn't be there. When the pen's not there, it's there. It's been there anyway. You see, and that's the real meaning of empty space. And some people never get it. You know, there's some scriptures that, I mean, some people think, oh, space is the distance between me and the wall. But that, you don't get it. There's a deeper meaning of empty space. It's the place where this pen is. And whether the pen occupies it or not, it's always going to be there. Okay? It doesn't ever change. It's empty space. Okay? From that sense, it's not changing. Okay? Everybody agree? So, you agree too easy. Yeah, so since it's not a changing thing, I guess it's not a working thing. I guess it doesn't do anything. You telling me it's not a working thing, Louise? Doesn't do anything? It doesn't or it does? I said, are you telling me it's not a working thing? Are you telling me it doesn't do anything? By the way, don't forget, if you agree it's a working thing, you must agree it's a changing thing. You're in trouble if you agree it's a working thing. Then you have to agree that it comes and goes. Then you have to agree that it comes and goes. Don't forget, those are synonyms. Takpa, ngopo, mitakpa, ngopo, and what was another one? Chepa, dunchik. Okay? They all mean the same thing. Make up your mind. Ngopo mayimata. I gave you a moment to think, okay? So I guess it doesn't have any function because Seamus and all of us, we established it doesn't change. It doesn't come and go. Anything which has a function comes and goes. Anything which comes and goes has a function. By coming and going, you function. You do something. You affect other things. Okay. Say something. Hey, by the way, in a debate, you just take a shot in the dark, you know, and go, duh. Mayimbatha. Huh? No, to tell you only have two choices. What are they? Cheese here.
like, huh, who said that? Say, 机器人. So I said, are you telling me it's not a working thing? And you said, 机器人. I didn't say that. You're saying that. Okay. What's the other choice? Duh. Yeah, right, right. It's not a working thing. Okay, which one are you going to go for? This is like truth or consequence.
没骂他。机器人.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah means I got you now, okay? 我不应骂他。我不应骂他。 So you're telling me it's a changing thing? I'm sorry. Does it perform a function? I'm sorry. Is it a working thing? Are you telling me it's a working thing? 我不应骂他。 Duh.
Yeah,
that's what I said. Stick to your guns, okay? In debate, you have to be shameless, okay? 我不应骂他。 Duh. 对你不应骂他。 So it performs a function, right?
Duh.
Good. Duh. 应对. How so, please?
How could the pen occupy something?
Yeah, I mean, it provides a space for the pen to be in, right? It provides a space, that's a function. Okay, I mean, this is a big debate in the Abhidhamma, okay? Space has a function because if it wasn't doing its shtick, the pen wouldn't have a place to stay, right? So it's providing space for the pen. What did you say?
What did you say?
I didn't catch you say. Oh, the pen. She said the pen doesn't stay in space. That means the thing is kicking it out of space, I guess. Space isn't always providing space for the pen, you mean, right? Something like that. This is where Rinpoche would go on and say, you have to think about it, okay? The debate is that, I mean, technically they would say it's not exerting itself or it's not influencing a function. It's not exerting an effort, or not, it's not exerting a function by just being there, and we can't technically say that it is working. It's not working to provide a space for something. You see what I mean? It's just a simple absence of something, and it's very tricky if you say it allows a thing to stay there. We can't say that. If you say that, you're in trouble in the debate ground. You can't say empty space allows a space for things to be. It just is. It's just there. It's just the absence of any obstruction. Okay? And now I'll give you the definition. Well, the definition of space is that. It's the simple absence of any obstruction. And it's always there and it never changes. And technically you can't use the word it provides a place for things to stay. Although there's a huge debate about it. So you're not, you know, it's a very difficult question. It's a big question in Abhidhamma. They argue about it a lot. Yeah. Jim? Say tokrek. Gaktam. Tokrek. Gaktam. The simple absence of physical obstruction is the definition of empty space in Buddhism. Yeah. Yeah, it's still there. Right. No, this is obstructing. The pen is obstructing. The pen ain't doing any the space is just sitting there. The space is not pushing anybody out of that space. The pen is pushing other things out of that space. There must still be tokre gaksam there where the pen is, or the pen would be pushed out of the space. That's all. That's all. You gotta get used to it. But what I want you to get, no, nothing else. So I wanna, the pen is tokre. The pen is a thing which pushes out other things. Nothing can stay there as long as the pen is there. But if there were no space there, the pen would get kicked out. But it's not, so it proves there's empty space there. Okay, sometimes it's occupied, sometimes it's not. It never changes. In fact, I like to think of it as place itself. And you gotta work with that. Okay, it's a little neat. Anyway, it wasn't the point of bringing it up. And we gotta go or else, I don't mind to stay till 11, but some other people get mad at me. Especially the Quaker House and John Stilwell. Okay. All I want you to really get about this is that to put your mind on the thing called empty space, you have to exclude the concept of something which is obstructing. You see what I mean? That prevents something from being there. You see? To perceive what I say when I say empty space, especially because of the word empty, which I've added, okay, just to make it easier for you. You have to, in your mind, exclude, mentally, you exclude physical objects, things that would stop something else from being there. You see? So when I say empty space from now on, your mind should go through a process of first excluding something which is not there. What's not there? Obstruction. If obstruction is not there, empty space. You see what I mean? Totally got something. The simple absence of an obstruction. But what the point I'm trying to make is that is to get you sensitive to the definition of a negative thing. You have to exclude something to perceive it. You see what I mean? Mentally, you have to directly say, oh, empty space. He means something where there's nothing that is blocking other things. Okay? That's all. That's all. Rinpoche likes to call it blockers. There's no blockers there. Because he saw it on TV. He heard it on the football game. You know, he's like, that's what blocker is. Yeah. Yeah, real quick though, okay? We can say, she said, there is any space really empty because there's always subatomic particles there. There's not enough to block the insertion of the pen into that place. That's all.
But what about forces?
By the way, the fact that they're there means that there is space there, because it's where they are. Okay, that's all. If it wasn't there, they'd get pushed out. You see what I mean? Okay. Second question.
What about the five forces, like gravity?
Oh, there's a big debate about it in the Abhidhamma Kosha third chapter. She said, explain gravity according to all this. In the Abhidhamma Kosha, they say everybody knows the earth is flat, and why doesn't water fall off the side? And third chapter. By the way, not so silly as it sounds. You know, long story, but I'm not going to go into it. Anyway, they say the karma of sentient beings who live on that planet prevents the water from falling off the side. Yeah. Leon asked, does the emptiness of the pen reside in place? I don't think they would say that, because they only talk about things residing in a place with regard to physical matter, I think. Like, you can't position your mind. You can't say that your mind has a location. Where do formless realm, when you take birth in the formless realm, where do you enter the formless realm? Remember, we had it. It's in the place you die. So there's no... there's no bardo. Why? There's no bardo being. You go straight to the formless realm. Why? You don't have to get anywhere. The function of a bardo is to get to your new birthplace. You know, so there's no bardo for a person who's being born into the formless realm. Because you just are born there wherever you died, and then you're not in any place anymore. So I think, I would say that probably Buddhist scripture says that place is a place for physical objects. I would say it that way. And I would debate it by using the bardo thing. You know. Yeah. So hang on one second though. But I could say, you could say that, and you do say that emptiness is attached to its object. You see what I mean? But it doesn't mean that it's located in the same place as the pen. Like, the pen has its own emptiness. And that emptiness goes out of existence, please. We can't say destroyed. When the pen is destroyed, it goes out of existence. So it is a quality which is attached to the pen. But we wouldn't say, I don't think, that it's located at the same place that the pen is located. But you could, you know, if you wanted to debate me and we were in the debate ground, and if I was going to take your side, I would say, oh, you know, isn't it based on some kind of, you know, doesn't it have a locus? And the guy would have to say, yeah, it has a locus. And I'd say, oh, it has a location, right? And they'd say, not necessarily, and then we'd go like that, you know. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead. Vessel. She said that the idea of place is like a vessel, and I'm repeating for the tape, okay? Because it doesn't pick up your question usually. So couldn't you say that your mind is located where your body's located? Is that what you mean? Oh, place. I think that you're falling into the trap of thinking of space as the distance between two walls or something. That's a trap, and it's a common. You know, the Abhidharma, what's it say? Namke Pukao says in the first chapter, it says, space doesn't refer to the vault of space, to the vault of the sky. And also, don't get into the trap of thinking that space refers to the place between two walls or two space. That's not the real meaning of space. It's the lack of physical obstruction, the simple absence of physical obstruction. Okay? Excuse me? He asked, is what, space? Now, that's a huge debate, okay? And I like the question. There are three interpretations among the four Buddhist schools of what dependent origination means. The lowest group, which is the first three schools lumped all together, called the functionalists, because they believe that anything that works must have some existence in and of itself. They say that thing is dependently arising when it depends on its causes. What was the thing we had? Supporting conditions or contributing factors, okay? The second group, which is the lower half of the Madhyamika school, says that's no good because that doesn't cover things like empty space, which also has its own dependent arising quality. So your definition is not good enough. You have to extend it wider. If you restrict it to causes and to think the fact that things depend on their causes, you're not going far enough, because then you exclude empty space, which must have its own dependent origination because it has its own emptiness. Okay. And they say you should say that a thing is dependently arising when it depends on its parts. And then they give the example of empty space. And then the guy says, what are the parts to empty space? And he says, east, west, north, south. How's that? The four quadrants, you see? And, okay, because location, you can locate something by, you know, relative to direction. Okay. Anyway, we better go on to the class. All right. I'll give you one more negative that I like. How do you spell that? Say, Lejin, Sumbo, Nimo, Se, Misa. Lejin, Sumbo, Nimo, Se, Misa. Lejin means Devadatta, okay? I'd like to translate it as Joe Blow, or John Smith, or it's meant to be like John Doe, you know. It's meant to be, you know, Joe Schmo, okay. And we'll see how you translate it when you become translators, okay. It just means Joe, anybody, okay. Plagin, Devadatta, it comes from ancient India. They're just trying to say John, okay. I think I translated it as John Smith or something, okay. Plagin. Tsumbo is an ancient word. You never ever see it. It means chubby. Okay? Tsumbo means chubby. Okay? Nyinmo means daytime. Nyinmor means during the daytime, during the day. Okay? Se means food. Se means food. Misa means he never eats food during the day. Okay. John Smith, that extremely chubby fellow, never eats food during the day. Okay. I think they're probably referring to some monk who was being very righteous and not eating after noon, you know, and then he kept getting fatter and fatter, okay? And never ate anything but that little thing in his bowl every day, you know. I believe it's probably a joke like that, okay? This is a meba. This is a gakpa. Okay? If you think about it, this is a gakpa. This is a negative thing. Why? Because it's directly stated, you know, he doesn't eat during the day. Okay? And you exclude in your mind that he eats during the day. In your mind, the gakja here is chubby John Smith eating during the day. And when I say, think of chubby John Smith who doesn't eat during the day, you picture this portly guy who's not out in the restaurants during the day, you know, in the East Village, okay? He doesn't frequent them during the day. But immediately something else comes up in your mind, which is what? He's got to be hanging out there at night, okay? He's got to have some bagels under his pillow, you know, something, okay? And it's, it, we call it that it implies, in Tibetan it's called Pemba, say Pemba. Chushin? Pemba. I'll spell it for you. I hope I spell it right. Let's see. Say Chushin, Pemba. Chushin, Pemba. Any negative statement or any negative thing or any negative expression, which Chushin Pemba is a different kind of negative. You see, Chushin, Chu means Dharma or thing. Chu means thing. Shen means some other thing. Okay, Chushin means some other thing. Pemba means it implies some other thing. Okay? Pemba, by the way, is a word in Tibetan which means to project. When you shoot an arrow, it's called Da Pemba. The karma that threw you into this life is called Penjeki Le. Okay? Pen. Pen means to project, a projectile, something. So when I say chubby John Smith never eats during the day, it's projecting into your mind another thing. You see what I mean? And that's a different kind of negative thing. And you have to learn those two kinds of negative things. Very important. And I'll give them to you again. The first kind is a simple absence of something. The second kind implies something else. Where is emptiness? Sorry, the true nature of things in this school, right? I have on my South Tantrika hat this course. I can't say emptiness. I have to say either selflessness or the true nature of things. Okay, because they don't believe that that's the same thing as emptiness. That's a long story. And that belief is not shared by any of the higher schools. Okay? Which one of these two, into which one will you put emptiness itself? I'm sorry, the true nature of things. Yeah, it's a simple absence of what? A self-existent thing. Tell me what a self-existent thing looks like. Describe to me a self-existent thing. The credit on my credit card. Okay? All the readings I ever got done well in advance of the class. Okay? The hair in the middle of my head. You know, you could say anything, you see? If I ask you to describe a self-existent thing, you're in trouble. There's no such thing. How long is a rabbit's horns? You see, you have to ask me, sorry, we can't describe a self-existent thing, but we can describe what people think of when you say self-existent thing. You see what I mean? There's a big distinction. You can describe what people think of when I say self, when they perceive a self-existent thing, or they think there's a self-existent thing. Oh, what's that? It's a thing that doesn't depend on their karma. The bad things that happened to you today, the people that treated you bad today, the people who irritated you today, the situations that you did not like in your life today all came from somewhere else. They are not your own mind doing its thing because you collected the karma to make it happen. They are somebody else. That person is stupid and they better get their act together. No, you better get your act together, okay? All of those people in the world that you think are stupid, what's the test? If they can create a mental affliction in you, then you are holding them to be self-existent. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. Okay. What's the test of whether you got your emptiness meter running or not? Can they upset you? Because if they can, you're not understanding their emptiness. Okay? Period. Anytime that another person or situation could cause you any kind of stress or discomfort or any kind of dislike of them, you're not understanding their emptiness by definition. It's very cool. You want to know how good your emptiness understanding is? See how pissed off you're getting at other people. Okay? You want to see at any time during the day, you know, is your emptiness understanding at a peak or at a valley? How pissed off do you get? You know, really, and I'm not kidding. It's a very interesting test because you cannot have a mental affliction unless you're holding the thing to be self-existent, which it never was, never could be, never will, isn't now. Okay? You can't, your mental afflictions feed off your ignorance. Okay? They need ignorance to eat. To live, they need your ignorance. Okay? Anytime you have a dislike someone and feel upset, anytime you're mental stream is disturbed, right? Definition of a mental affliction, any kind of thought that could disturb your peace of mind. Once your peace of mind is disturbed, by definition, you're having a mental affliction, and by definition, you're taking that problem or that problem person to be self-existent. It's very interesting. It's very, you know, that's why they say go up on a cliff and have someone, you know, like, go like that, stand behind you and go like that, and you get this emotion come up. You couldn't have that unless you saw the thing as self-existent. Okay, it's very interesting. Yeah?
Does that mean that you shouldn't be happy by the same
logic? Shouldn't be happy in the sense, he said, does that mean you shouldn't be happy or sad? You can be sad, okay? I mean, Buddhas are sad, right? But their mental streams are not disturbed or upset. You see what I mean? There's a fine distinction between being upset and being sad. You know, you can be sad about the fact that you created this person and you have to put up with them for the next until you purify the karma. You can be sad about it. They have compassion, right? They have a sadness. You look at Trijang Rinpoche's picture, you know. You see it in his face. He's sad about us, you know. But he's not upset. See, there's a distinction. You know. His mental continuum is not thrown off balance. You see what I mean? It's not, there's a big distinction between that. That you can be happy, but never be so happy that you would do. By the way, another test is your happiness or your joy about something, legal or not. Okay? Would you do something negative to somebody to keep it? That's the question. That's the test of whether you're seeing that thing as self-existent. I mean, we talked about the negative one, right? What's the test of whether happiness or joy is ignorant or not? Would you fight to keep that thing? Would you hurt someone to keep that thing? Then it's ignorance. You see what I mean? And that's a very fine line too. Okay? Yeah. He says, but in a case where, say, somebody punches me in the face, wouldn't I feel pain and wouldn't I feel upset? You guys who studied the Diamond Cutter know about the guy who suffered under the hands of the king of Kalinkard, right? Kalinka. The king of Kalinka was wandering through the forest one day, caught his wife with a Buddhist monk. The Buddhist monk was teaching her sweet Dharma. He took it the wrong way, he tied him down, and he slowly cut off all his fingers and toes and feet and arms. And the Buddha is relating this story during the Diamond Cutter Sutra, and he says, I felt the pain, but I did not get angry. You see? And that's the distinction. Yeah. I did not lose my balance. I did not lose my peace of mind. But of course I was in intense pain. And there's a distinction between the two. Okay? Okay. There's a word for simple absence. And these are the two divisions of all negative things. Say megat.
Megat.
Megat. a simple absence of something. Examples are space, empty space, the simple absence of physical obstruction, the simple absence of tangible obstruction. Yeah? I mean, when I say space, I mean empty space. Okay? There's no such thing as... Well, when I say empty space, I mean this empty space can be occupied by an object. Yeah, it's still empty. It's always empty. Yeah. Yeah. How about available space or something? It's always available. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. If it weren't empty, the thing couldn't occupy it. That's all. You got the idea. I hate to... I did not say empty space in this reading. Why? And here you can answer... I'll answer a homework question for you. Okay. The opponent says all negatives must be such that the words which express them have a negative word in them somewhere, like un or non or less or empty. And the guy says, no, what about numka? Okay, space. Num doesn't mean no, not, un, less. And ka doesn't mean that. So there, ergo, that's not, did you notice that was not a part of the definition of a negative? Okay? You can have things which are positive and which have a negative sound, have a negative word in them. For example, I like it. Mitakpa. Okay? Mitakpa. Supports my theory. Okay? What's mitakpa mean? Ooh, wow. Changing. Okay? But in the Tibetan, there's a negative particle there. Not unchanging. You see what I mean? Mi takpa. Okay? Now, what is that? Is that a negative? Mi takpa. Think first. I'm not referring to the wording. I'm referring to the concept, to perceive changing. Do you have to reject anything else? No, it's a positive event. You see, you're just watching the thing change. You can go out and watch the traffic on the George Washington Bridge. That's a mi takpa. And you're just watching it. Okay? So mi takpa, which has a negative word in it, doesn't necessarily have to be a negative concept. We're talking the concept of a negative thing. Okay? Yeah.
Is there a way you can translate
pa as
something other than thing? Because I think that's the thing that...
That's difficult. No, because pa is attached to all adjectives in Tibetan, all nouns, all verbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be nice. I got another question for you, though, while I'm on the subject, okay? We can knock off another homework question. How about dhammitakpa? How about the fact that sound is a changing thing? Think carefully, okay? This is a hard one. I ask you. Okay, let's debate. Ah. Nah. How about dhammitakpa? By the way, I remember Art once asked a beautiful question in class. I'll never forget it, you know. He was sitting there, you know, in his way, and he said, wait a minute, Rinpoche, and he burst into class, you know, and he says, are all unchanging things negative? And Rinpoche said, yeah, I guess so. Okay? You know, he couldn't think of one that wasn't. So now I ask you again. Dhammitakpa. The fact that the sounds are changing things. Is it positive or negative? It sounds positive, right? Now I'll say it a different way, and it only dawned on me this afternoon, you know, because I've struggled with this for a while. How about sound is always a changing thing? It's closer to sound is never an unchanging thing, right? So how about if I put always? I like to do that. Let's say always. Sound is... I'm talking about general truths, right? We've been struggling with general truths. And there's even some confusion in the text, I think. Okay? Sounds are changing things. And I'm going to emphasize the always. Sounds are always changing things. Huh? Yes, what? I know it's true. And it's a universal truth. I'm asking, is it a positive thing or a negative thing? That statement, that truth. If I say, sounds are always changing things. Huh? But she said, that happens to be an unchanging thing. That's true, according to me, okay? There's a little bit of a debate in the reading today, okay? He said some truths are changing. What truth is changing, please? Show. Come back to me in a couple of days. Okay, no. Anyway, think about it. Is it a concept which you can only perceive by eliminating something else? It really is, you see, and I believe that's the point. And I'm struggling with it myself, so you play around with it when you go home, okay? But I believe, and as far as I can tell in the text, all general truths are mayingax. It's a negative which implies something else. And I'll give you two examples. One sounds like a negative and one doesn't sound like a negative. Okay, be careful. Here's the one that sounds like a negative. John Smith, that chubby guy, doesn't eat during the day. Okay? That sounds like a negative, especially because it has that not in it, right? It's easy. See, you're getting confused between the concept of a negative and the wording of a negative, and don't do that. Okay? The definition of a negative was not anything I say that has a negative in it, like not or no or un or non or like that, okay? It was rather anything that you could only perceive directly by eliminating or excluding something else directly, okay? Don't forget that, okay? So it's obvious that the expression, John Smith, who's chubby, never eats during the day, is a negative in the sense that it implies something else, okay? It projects something else. What? He stuffs himself at night, right? It directly states he doesn't eat during the day. It indirectly implies that he stuffs himself at night. It actually directly implies that, according to Buddhism. Okay, how about the following one? What was my other one? Did you like what I cooked for you today? What you cooked this time was really good. Okay? Okay? I'll say it again. What you cooked this time was really good, okay? Is that a negative thing? Is that a negative statement? What you cooked this time was really good. According to Buddhism, it's a mayingak, okay? It's a mayingak. Why? Because you're excluding all the other times when they cooked really bad, okay? To perceive the truth, the general truth, that what they cooked was really good, you have to forget all the bad dinners they ever made you, okay? And to perceive the truth that this dinner was really good, you mentally you have to try to forget all those nights that they burned it, you know, okay? And that way you can establish in your mind, this one was good, okay? This one was good. I assert that all general truths are the same. When I use the word always, when I say that sounds are always changing things, I'm excluding, what I'm essentially saying is they are never unchanging things. You see what I mean? And you got to cook that. It looks like, in this text, that all general truths are mayingaks. Okay? That's tricky. Now, whether those are functional things or changing, that's another question. Yeah? I'm sorry, say again? A rabbit's horn. Okay. He said, how do we know a rabbit's horn? Yeah. Yeah. He said, how do we know the rabbit's horns don't exist? How about I say this? When I refer to a rabbit's horn, I refer to rabbit's horns which are easily observable on most of the rabbits that Americans normally run into in our common experience. You know, and that's, you know, you have to say that. In the debate ground, you know, you start out by saying, look, for the next 3 hours, when I refer to a rabbit's horn, I'm talking about the one that we both know can't be there. Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, we have to deal, he said, are you talking about observable under your normal perceptions, blah, blah. Of course, we have to deal with our own reality, you know. I mean, yeah, we do have to. Now, how do we do that?
I don't know.
There's a big debate in the Pramana Vartika. Like, do you is your normal reality defined by taking several examples of rabbits that you've seen and then drawing some kind of broad conclusion about all rabbits? I mean, how do you determine or how do you conclude that rabbits don't have horns? How many rabbits did you check? You know what I mean? And really, there's a debate about it. And
yeah.
It's similar, yeah. It does, yeah. Yeah. They could just have a, a hormonal problem or something like that. And that's true. That's really true. We're talking about general, everybody knows he sneaks cookies at night in the monastery and stuff like that. Okay, yeah. Yeah, you can say that. Yeah. In our current accepted convention of a rabbit, yeah. Yeah, you can say that. He said, by definition, when we define a rabbit, we don't define it with horns. And he said it's the same as talking about a round square. By definition, a square has four corners. By definition, our normal definition of a rabbit would not include horns. Okay. Yeah. It's equal to a what?
Takpa.
That's a huge debate. According to Michael Roach, it is. I mean, general truths to me are takpa. There is a debate in the scripture, and you'll see some greasy stuff going on in your reading tonight. Sorry. You know, there are... Sometimes my ingaks are called working things that are negatives. Okay? And it's not clear in my mind, and I admit it, okay? To me, a general truth has to be an unchanging thing, you know? The really good Saltrantikas distinguish between the expression of a general truth and the general truth itself. They say that the expressions of general truth, the words, or I guess you could say the fact that, okay, rabbits don't have horns, for example. The wording, or in a sense, the quality, right, is always takpa, is always unchanging. But is that thing unchanging is a big debate, okay. No such thing. He said all universal truths have to be expressions. Then all universal truths are sound?
Yimbata. Yes,
they
are sound.
So if we never say them, they're not general truths?
Yimbata. Huh? They are sounds with convention.
They are convention, yes. You can say that. I guess you can say that. I'm not going to say either way. Okay. These are the two kinds of negatives, all right? And one thing you should know. Did you have a question? No. All right. Maybe we take a break there. One more. Yeah.
You said before that you say, I like your cooking this time.
Yeah.
Why did you like it before?
Right.
It does not. It's specified. You could not like it before.
By the way, it's in the inflection of my voice, isn't it? You see, it's in the inflection of my voice. In English, in this example, it's in the inflection. If you wrote it down on a piece of paper and said, I liked your food this time, it could be a mayengak, it could be a negative which does imply something else, or it could be a positive. But when you hear my inflection this time, then you know, okay? All right, take a break, okay? Right. Yeah. Yulia said, what's the difference between the absence of something and not being something? This is not an elephant. Okay? That's not being something else. You see what I mean? And then emptiness is the absence of a self-existent thing in this room. You see what I mean? One is the fact that the thing is not here, and one is the fact that this is not the thing. In English, it's the difference between the word is and the word exists sometimes. You see? He is or he is not president of the United States. And then the president of the United States doesn't exist. Those are two different things. You see what I mean? One is a mayingak, one is a megot. Okay? The absence of the president of the United States would be a megot. The fact that Joe Schmo is not the president of the United States is a mayingak. Okay? And Those are just the words that I use to translate Megok and Mayingok. Okay, and you might want to get used to that because it's on your homework that way. I'm trying to be merciful. Okay? All you really need to remember is simple absence and implying something else. By the way, if your homework were to ask, describe a Mayingok in general. Okay, describe number two here in general. Then you'd say something like, this is how we do the final, right? It's a negative thing. Where the wording used to describe it, used to express it, sorry, where the words used to express it imply something else. You see what I mean? They imply something else. Incidental to denying what they already deny. You see what I mean? When you say he's fat and he doesn't eat during the day, you're denying that he eats during the day. So incidental to denying that he eats during the day, you are implying what? He eats at night. Okay. By the way, somebody asked me, is that always the case? Is that, you know, a kyaba? It's not a kyaba, right? He could have some kind of problem. He could have stopped eating during the day yesterday, you know, or whatever. So it's not a kyaba. But remember the context. It's a bunch of monks sitting in the monk cafeteria wondering why this guy who never eats more than a little bowl of food keeps getting chubbier and chubbier, you know, like maybe something's going on here, you know. Okay, because classically you're not supposed to eat after noon, all right? A monk is not supposed to have any food after 12 until the following morning, okay? Okay, we'll go on to some formal logic that's very short today. We talked about the definition of a reason. What was the definition of a reason? Anything you give as a reason. Okay, because this guy is filled with pink polka dots and green stripes, okay, is a reason. Okay, is it a correct reason? No, because the three relationships don't hold. Okay, here we go. Because the sky is pink with green polka dots. Okay? Is it a correct reason? No. How can you say that? How can you say it's not a correct reason when you don't even know the other elements yet? I didn't say, consider this, it's that, because it's that. You know? And already you're telling me it's an incorrect reason. How can you say that when you don't even know what relationships I'm talking about yet? Aren't you supposed to wait until you hear the thing I'm talking about, and then the thing I'm trying to prove about it, and then the reason. And then you're going to see if those three relationships hold. Is number one number three? If someone is number three, does it make it number two? If something's not number two, does it mean it can't be number three? You didn't wait. You just said, incorrect reason. Okay. Huh? He's right, okay? He said, the relationship between one and three is never going to hold anyway because number three doesn't exist. Okay? Doesn't exist. So consider non-existence. I guess we can never say that self-existent things don't exist because the definition of non-existent would be something which is not perceived by correct perception. I can't. Well, how about we just put it this way? Look, consider non-existence. It does exist because the sky is pink with purple stripes or something like that. Doesn't number three apply to number one? Oh, so a sky that's pink with green stripes or whatever is not something that's true about things that don't exist? Okay, you got me. All right, I'm going. That's a kind of a tricky one, okay? It's a big debate in the monastery. Does the horns which grow on a rabbit apply to non-existence? When I'm trying to prove non-existence, don't I have to use a thing in the reason which is impossible? And then how could you have a relationship between a non-existing thing and an impossible thing? Mm-hmm. So how could the three relationships hold? You gotta cook that one. I mean, I've seen really great debaters debate it hour after hour, okay? It's kind of tricky. Anyway, where were we? Okay, and the definition of a good reason was where those three relationships hold. Why are we talking about that? What's the main reason to talk about this? I mean, if you had to go out of here and find some practical application of that, what would it be? There will be no Buddhists in the West who have to use proofs more than the first generation. You are the first generation, right? It'll be up to you to prove things more often than all the Buddhists who come after you, you know? You will be constantly asked by people throughout your life, if you become a good Buddhist and a good Buddhist teacher, which I hope you will, you'll be asked to prove things. And you will always remember this class. And you'll always remember something is not a good reason for them unless the three relationships hold, and unless what? They accept the three relationships, right? By the way, to accept the three relationships, they must accept the words used to express the three relationships. You can't say to them, consider hungry ghosts, you know? They do live in such a realm because blah, 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 blah. And they don't even accept the idea of a hungry ghost yet. You see what I mean? You can't prove a quality of a hungry ghost to a person who doesn't even accept that thing yet. You have to go back. You have to step back. You have to start proving that the mind doesn't die when the body dies. And then you have to start proving the possibility that some kind of really bad karma could create an impression of a hungry ghost existence. And then you have to establish the existence of a hungry ghost. But you can't go arguing about hungry ghosts first, okay? Don't do it. You know, I see all these Western people, Westerners who try to teach Buddhism, and the first class is about the hell realms, you know, and the people are just getting uncomfortable. You know, this is what Father so-and-so was yelling at me about, you know, and it's just as unprovable when they present it as it was when he presented it, you know. Don't go that way. You know, first establish that the mind doesn't stop when the body stops. And by the way, there's not a shred of evidence possible that the mind stops when the body stops. Okay? There's not. There's not a single shred of evidence to support that. It's a cultural thing that Mrs. Melvin taught you in the first grade or something. It's New York Times worldview. Okay? And it's wrong. And there's not a shred of evidence that supports that. So you have to go that way first. And then you describe how different states of mind grow. You know, like the concept. Franklin and what's the guy's name? Thomas Jefferson, sitting around a table in Philadelphia in 1774, I think, and discussing what kind of country do we want here. And they had these bitter debates. You know, one guy said a monarchy and George is going to be king, George Washington this time. And then, and I remember I read that Benjamin Franklin's landlady used to ask him every time when he came home, well, what is it, Mr. Franklin? Are we going to have a monarchy or democracy? And he'd say, I don't know yet, you know, and we're still talking. So the concept in two men's minds, you know, 200 years later is sucking out 40% of your income, you know. You know what I mean? And it was just a little idea in a guy's mind. Don't tell me that thoughts don't grow, you know what I mean? That concepts don't grow. Of course they grow, you know. A seed planted in your mind in first grade of a thing called A, B, C has become your very sophisticated ga-ga-ga, right? Now you're able to do that in other languages as well. And of course those seeds are staying where? In your mind, you know. So don't tell me they don't grow. I mean, start like that. What I'm trying to say is the reason we're studying formal logic, and never forget it, is that you get sensitive to the fact that when you present Buddhism to somebody, you must go backwards until you reach common ground. And that, in Buddhist logic, is more important than the truth of the statement itself. Okay? A statement is not true in Buddhist logic until it's accepted on common ground by both parties. Period. That's very earth-shaking, you know? I can give to you a true statement, but it's not true for you, and neither, generally speaking, is it true unless both parties accept all three terms and the relationships that I described. It's very interesting. The implication is he already accepts all three relationships. He just never put it together the way you're putting it together for him. And that's where you should start your arguments for Buddhism. Why? Because we want Buddhism to be bigger than Christianity. We want to take over every church in New York City. We're starting with our first one, right? And not like that, okay? Why? Because you can stop death this way. You can help people stop their death. Really, honestly. That's why we're here. It's not like a debate between this or that. That doesn't matter. This is a method which any particular person can use to stop their death in this lifetime. Period. And that's a precious thing. And if there's a clever way or a good way or a valid way to present it to people, then you better learn it. And the goal here is reduce it back to common ground. Do not lay arguments on people that involve Sanskrit, Tibetan, you know, hell realm, preta things that they can't accept yet. Start with common ground. You know, His Holiness is very good at it, right? And then work up to more. Okay. If you can't prove future lives from common ground, then they probably don't exist. Okay. And that's the idea. Okay, so we go to the second kind of a good reason. Last time we did a good reason which involves a result, right? Okay, consider a mountain pass covered with smoke. Okay, there must be a fire there because I can see all the smoke there. Okay, and you have to, that's a correct reason where the reason given is a result. And so it's called a correct reason which involves a result. Today we're going to do say Rangshingi Dayanda. Rangshingi Dayanda. Dayanda means a good reason, right? A correct reason. Okay. Rangshin means which involves a nature. Okay? A correct reason which involves a nature. Here the word nature is a little bit deceptive, misleading. And you have to think of it as if something, to be one thing is to automatically be the other. You have to remember that phrase, okay? Remember, to be a Chevy is to automatically be a car. So that's called a Rangshin relationship, a nature relationship. Why? The nature of all car, all Chevys is that they're cars, okay? And you have to think of that. So this is a reason where the thing given as the reason is such that to be that thing is to automatically be the thing that you're trying to prove. Okay? And that's all. I'll say it again. The thing given as the reason, to be the thing given as the reason, is to automatically be the quality that you're trying to prove. I'll give you an example. I'll say it one more time. Okay? This kind of correct reason is a reason where to be the thing in the reason is to automatically be the thing that you're trying to prove, the quality that you're trying to prove. I'll say it in that 1, 2, 3, okay? Remember the three parts? What are the three parts? Consider sound, number one. It is a changing thing, number two. Why? Three, because it's made, okay? That's the classic proof. Okay? Consider sounds. They are changing things because they are things which are made. Okay, classic correct reason. That happens to be a Rangshingi Dayanda. Why? To be a thing which is made is to automatically be a thing which is changing. Okay? To be number three is to automatically be number two. If your hand is tired, you can just write that. Three is automatically two. I'll say it again. Consider sounds. They are changing things because they are things which are made. What's the relationship between number two and number three? Is if you are number two, are you automatically number three? If you're a changing thing, are you automatically a made thing? Yes. Okay. Does that always hold true in a correct reason, rangxin reason? No. I'll tell you why. Consider sound. It's a changing thing because you can hear it. Okay? Consider sound. It's a changing thing because you can hear it. Are all number threes number twos? Are all things that you can hear automatically changing things? Yes. Okay? All things that you can hear, which means sounds, are automatically changing things. But is the reverse true? Are all things which are changing automatically things you can hear? No. So there are two kinds of rangshi gitakyan daks, and we just got out of it easy, okay? In one, the relationship between three and two goes both ways. In the other, the relationship only goes one way. That's all. In some of them, to be two doesn't mean you have to be three. That's all. In some of them, to be two means you have to be three. But they're both valid. Okay, I'll give you the two logical statements again. Consider sounds. They are changing things because they are made things. In this case, the relationship between three and two goes both ways. Every made thing is a changing thing, and every changing thing is a made thing. Is that always the case? No. What about the reason why I say, the logical statement where I say, consider sounds, they're changing things because you can hear them? Is it a proof that just because you can hear something, it's a changing thing? Yes. Okay. But is it a proof that every changing thing has to be something you can hear? No. Okay. What's a church in? Give me an example. Colors. Okay. Like that. All right. So those are the two kinds of valid, you know, correct reasons of rangshin. Okay. And that finishes that, and you're glad. Okay. Last thing. I've got to give you some new debate stuff, all right? Anybody have a rosary? Thank you. Okay. Okay, I'm just going to check your cheers and your dogma droops and your kyapa machings. Okay, you ready? Be careful. By the way, don't space out and sit in the back. There's kids in the monastery who do that, and they end up in the computer center. Okay? Or cooking. You don't want to do that in your next life, okay? All right. Take sounds. They are changing things because they are made. What do you say? Yin. Okay? Chepa yin meche. Okay? And you say yin, yin. Okay? All right. Chepa yin ma ta. You're telling me they're made things? Duh. Right. That's what I said. Ma yin ma ta. Da pa yin meche. No, they're not, because they're unchanging things. Dhammadru. Yeah, Dhammadru. Which is to say, they're not unchanging things, stupid head. Dhammayamata. You're telling me they're not unchanging things? Duh. Dhammayamata. Machibayamata. Yeah, they are. They must be unchanging things because no one ever made them. Machibayamata. No, when I end in cheer, you can only say Dhammadu or Kevamachu, okay? Dhammadu, right. They're not things that didn't have, that weren't made by anything. Yimbatha. Yes, they are, because Dakpa and Machepa Dunji Yimbicha. Because everything that's unchanging is always unmade. Huh. Kevamachu. We're going to change you. You know, in the monastery, this is how you get stuck with a name like Kelvin Machung for the rest of your life. Oh, here comes Kelvin Machung. Yeah. Okay, I said, it is true because everything unchanging is unmade. And you said, yeah, that is true. Everything unchanging is unmade. It doesn't prove what you're trying to prove, stupid head, okay? Kelvin Machung. Oh, so Drachi Chen. Are you telling me that sounds are unchanging things? Yimbata. Teacher. Who's going to be teacher? Say teacher.
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 And that's like, who said that? You know, okay? I didn't say that. Okay, so now you got it. That's all your answers. By the way, you can sit and memorize your homework for an hour, or you can debate for 3 minutes. It's the same thing. You got to learn to debate, okay? It's fun, too. And you learn it like that. Like half of you guys didn't want to learn Dharma Drupa and Kyabha Machung. And here you are. You're already stuck with it, right? It's really good. Okay, so I'll do it one more time. Now we'll do today's homework and go home and do it with your friends. Okay. Namga chuchen. Mega yinte gaba yinbe chen. I'm sorry. Yeah. Namga chuchen. Say namga chuchen. Namga chuchen. Mega yinte. Mega. Yinte. Gapa yinbechen. Okay, consider empty space. It's a negative in the sense of being a simple absence of something, because it's a negative. Okay? Namga chuchen. It's a negative in the sense of an absence of something, because it's a negative. Gapa yinbechen. Kabamachen. Which means, just because something is a negative, doesn't mean it's a simple absence of something. Hey. Are you telling me just because something's a negative, it doesn't have to be a negative in the sense of the absence of something? Duh. That's what I said. Shout. Show me something. Show me something that's a gakpa and not a mega. Show me something that's a negative and not a negative in the sense of the absence of something.
Chubby Joe.
Yeah. Come on. Chubby Joe, Chuchen. Mayinga yimbasa. No, by the way, it's very cool in the debate ground. You just interrupt somebody halfway through. And, you know, Chubby Joe Churchin, Mayingai, Yimata. Sorry, Gakpa Yimata. Are you telling me Chubby Joe is a negative thing? Yimata. Come on, Nen Gep. Give me an answer, man. Oh, duh. Yimata. Gakpa Yimata. Chubby Joe, Gakpa Yimata. Andy Churchin, Gakpa Yimata. You're telling me Andy's a Gakpa Yimata. Say. Andy Churchin, Gakpa Yimata. Is Andy a negative? Because Fat Joe's a negative. Is it? Oh, Andy Church, Gapa Yimata. You tell me, Andy. Good. By the way, if you're in trouble, just keep going. You can't lose anything. Gapa Yimata. So Andy's a negative, right? Duh. Yeah. Okay, that's how you say or, okay? Is he a negative in the sense of an absence or a negative in the sense of not being something, please? Megayin. Because there's only two kinds, which we all know. It's either got to be the absence of something or not being something, right? And there's different things. In English, he is not Andy, or Andy doesn't exist there in that second pew, Andy. Megayimata? Simple absence of something, Andy, okay? Okay. Yinte? Yinte? Where's Andy? Yinte? Why? There's no Andy, right? Andy Mega, you mentioned. Andy's the simple absence of Andy. Okay, anyway, you'll never forget those words, okay? I mean, I had some kid come up and wipe me out during my pre-Geshe debate. I'll never forget the stuff he was debating about, you know? Okay. Mitakpa Chuchen, Gakpa Yimbechen, okay? Mitakpa Chuchen. Let's talk about Mitakpa. You ready, Shinipo? Don't pretend you're listening to that thing, okay? Okay. Mitakpa Chuchen. What's Mitakpa mean?
Changing
thing. Okay, but in Tibetan it's not Dakpa, right? Mitakpa Chuchen. Gakpa Yimbechen. That's a negative thing. Okay. Mitakpa, not unchanging thing, is a negative thing. Yimbechen. You got two choices. You can say, well, you have three. You can say, right, yin. Okay. consider mitakpa. Okay? It's a changing thing. I'm sorry, it's a negative. Gapa yimbecha. Okay? Mitakpa gapa yimbecha. Changing thing is a negative thing. Good. Tamadu. Say it with authority. Tamadu. 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 Oh. Gapa mayamata. You telling me it's not a negative thing? Mitapa is not a negative thing? Are you saying that? No, you say duh. Duh, that's what I said. Okay. Duh. 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 Okay. Yinte? Why? By the way, if you want to get out of it easy, just say, oh, it's one of the two negatives. Or something like that. But you can say anything you want, actually.
We just keep saying la until you just figure out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they'll close the Quaker house after a while. I don't think it'll last for 10 minutes, though. What? Why don't you say I got these earphones on? Kama yinde, why is mitakpa a negative thing? Why are you saying mitakpa is a negative thing? He just said it was. I said mitakpa. Oh, I'm sorry, you said damadu. So you're telling me it's not a negative thing. Changing the, now listen, changing thing is not a negative thing, right? Duh. 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 Okay, duh.
Yeah.
Right. Duh. Ah, yeah. Tapa mayamata. You tell me, I'm sorry, gakpa mayamata. You tell me it's not a negative thing? Buh. That's what I said. Yinte mi gatsi yimbeche. It is a negative thing because the word mi is a negative in Tibetan. Okay? Ah, nice. Nice, 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 nice. Okay, what just happened? I said, hey, come on, Shinapal. Mitapa is a negative because it's got a non in the front of it. And then Jay said, that doesn't prove anything. Chamamachu. Of course it has a negative on it. That doesn't prove it's a negative thing. Okay. Yeah. Machata. You tell me doesn't prove it? Duh. Right. Okay, good. You beat me. Finished. Okay? That's a nice one. How about this one? This is a really nice one. Dami Dapa Chuchen. You're so hot. Listen, you're on a roll, okay? Dami Dapa Chuchen. Gapa. My image. Dami Dapa Chuchen, I mean, let's talk about the fact that sound is a changing thing. Okay? The fact that sound is a changing thing. Dami Dapa Chuchen. Gapa Maimbata. So I guess it's not a negative thing, according to Mr. Jehan. Just to be a bodhisattva. Come on. You don't have to be a bodhisattva. Just be yourself. Maimbata. Maimbata. It's not a gapa. The fact that sound is a changing thing is not a negative thing. My ambition. No, you can either say. You don't say do cheer, right? You can say yin, my yin. You can say my yin. It's not. It's not a negative thing. It's not a negative thing? Okay. Then you go like this. This is the lesson for tonight, okay? We have 6 minutes to do this one. Chop it on girl. Say pe jadanga. Chop it on girl. Okay. Becha means a Tibetan book, a scripture, right? Becha. The honorific, the polite word is chakpe, like hand. Okay. Sometimes you add the word chak to things to make them honorific. Like you don't say Ken Rinpoche, here's your mula. You say, Ken Rinpoche, here's your respectful holiness's money, which is Changmu. Okay? So you add the word Chak. Okay? So, in Serame Monastery, the greatest monastery, we say it that way. And each monastery has their own, and you can tell who a person studied with by how they say, you contradict the Holy Scripture. Okay? You contradict Scripture. You contradict the Holy Scripture. Okay? Say, Pe Chatanga. Cha pe danga. And then there are people from Ganden, right? Okay, they go. Okay, like that, you know. And then when we contradict scripture, they go, Okay. They make fun of us and we make fun of them. Okay. By the way, two ways you can prove something. Say lung, rik. Lung, rik. Who's that nice monk, that incredible bodhisattva attendant out in New Jersey? Jampa Lungrik. That's what his name means, okay? We should all be like that, right? If we have enough classes, maybe. Lung means scriptural authority. Rik means logic. Two ways to prove something in Buddhism, okay? You can either use lung or you can use rikpa, okay? And it's such a famous thing that they call kids when they get ordained. They say, okay, your name is scriptural authority or logical proof. Jampa Lungrik, okay? By the way, your first name comes normally from your Kembo, which really means in Vinaya, the person who gave you your vows. The former abbot for 12 years was named Jampa Dunya. So there are about 200 monks in Sarame called Jampa. Okay. He ordained everybody for 12 years, everyone who came in, you see. So they all get the same first name. So you make up names for them like Kyawamaji. Okay. So it's either legal to use Lung or Rik. Now, as far as scripture, you have to use one that's accepted by both parties, okay? When we debate in the winter debates between all the Galupa colleges, you can't use scriptural authority from your college. You can't use your college's textbooks, okay? You have to use like Jetsun Kapa or the first Dalai Lama or somebody like that, okay? That's the, because you can't use scriptural authority unless the other party agrees to it. And you see so many American Buddhists trying to use a scriptural authority that the other party doesn't accept. You see what I mean? Such and such a Rinpoche said so. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't accept that as scriptural authority. You know, I don't care. Doesn't you see? You have to choose something that the other party agrees, and you cannot, in the rules of logic, use a scriptural authority that the other person doesn't accept. And by the way, scriptural can mean a person, right? You can't quote somebody that they don't accept, okay? And say that proves it. You know, you're wasting your time. Go back to common ground. You are breaking the rules of debate. Okay? You're breaking the rules of explaining something to somebody when you pull out such and such a Rinpoche that they don't accept. Okay? Can't do that. When you debate among Tibetan schools, you would debate using the Kangyur or the Tengyur, the word of the Buddha or the word of one of the great Indian commentators. And that would be accepted by all Buddhist schools in Tibet. Okay? When you debate Buddhist schools from other countries, you might have to go, I like the Abhidhamma Kosha, because that's accepted by all Buddhist schools in the world that I'm aware of. Probably there's one that I'm not aware of that doesn't accept it, but everyone accepts the Abhidhamma Kosha. Just using the Abhidhamma Kosha, you can prove almost anything you want to prove if you know it well. Okay, so you have to be sensitive to where your opponent is coming from. Okay, and then normally, when you quote a person in debate, you say, Dacha namla katan kepa di pakba, jetun keshin dupanye pe kedu damadage ki sumba kashi kelangopa yimbechi. Okay, which means, I am speaking of the incomparable, the great, the holy, the glorious, the unerring, master of all attainments, kedu damadage kelangopa yimbechi. Say kelen?
Kelen.
Gopa?
Gopa.
Yimbechi. Which means, and you better accept it, okay? By the way, this is the textbook writer from Sarame, who wrote all the textbooks back in the 14 and 1500s. So if you quote from him, and the guy's got to accept it, you know, and then you say, I am quoting this person, and you don't use their Sanjemba, right? Sanjemba. You never refer to your lama like Nagarjuna, Tsongkhapa, okay? You always have to say the great Tsongkhapa or master Tsongkhapa or something like that. It's a Buddhist custom. It's a vow, in fact. It's important, okay? So you always do it like that. What was the last thing? You must memorize the quotation you use. You can't go into the debate ground with a piece of paper. They would laugh you out of the debate ground, okay? It's got to be, they would say here. It has to be here in your mind. By the way, that proves your mind's not here, right? They say it better be in your mind, okay? And when you go into the debate ground, you have to have that quotation ready, okay? And what you don't want to do is get into a quotation that you can't finish. It's really embarrassing. You say, the scripture says, and everybody goes, you know, then you say, then you get really in big trouble. Okay. That's all. Yeah. Yeah, sort of. 나보남네 like that. You have to be able to quote the scripture. Okay. What do you want me to quote? Anything? Yeah, Seidura ne shisun beche. It is stated in the Seidura. Okay. That's, by the way, we switched duras tonight. We just went to a different text because the presentation on positives and negatives is presented very well in the text from Dibung Monastery. Okay. Okay. Yeah, you're studying the Seidura. It's a different one. Okay, we'll stop there. But anyway, those are the conditions. You can either prove something logically, or you can use an authority that both people accept. And don't let me see you American Buddhists going around quoting people that the other party cannot accept. That's no good. You broke the rules of your own tradition. Okay, can't do it. Okay.
This is the end of Class 6.
You have been listening to The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute.
The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.